Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
The United States expects Gaza ceasefire talks to go ahead as planned in Qatar today, despite a decision by Hamas to not to attend. The US Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Qatar's Prime Minister both warned all sides not to undermine the talks set to open in Doha. Israel said it would send a delegation, while Iran said only a ceasefire deal would hold them back from direct retaliation against Israel. For more on this, we're joined by Lise Doucette, BBC Chief International Correspondent. Good morning, Louise. Lise.
Good morning. Well, let's hope it's a good morning.
Well, yes, exactly. And that's kind of my first off big picture question to you. How would you rate these talks' chances of success?
The stakes are very high. Some observers are calling this the last chance summit. I don't think the mediators will give up on ending this grievous war and bringing the hostages home. But I think that warning is a nod to the very, as you mentioned, the very real risk of Iran and Hezbollah escalating tensions in the region by retaliating for the back-to-back assassinations believed to be Israel's work at the end of July. What are the prospects this time? Well, the United States, and in particular Joe Biden, have been pushing harder than ever to get a deal. A deal is said to be on the table. Israel is sending a high-powered delegation. It's been the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, has been criticized in the past for sending a team which could only listen and not negotiate. Hamas said they are not taking part. Now, you have to break that down, because Hamas has never directly taken part. There is, because of them being on a terrorism blacklist, they don't have direct talks with the United States, for example. But they have taken part indirectly through the Qatari and Egyptian mediators. And this time they say they won't even take part indirectly. That's because, of course, Israel, they believe, has just assassinated the man who was their man at the table, their chief negotiator, Ismail Haniyeh. Hamas is now led by its most hard line of leaders, Yahya Sinwar. And Hamas doesn't believe that Israel, and in particular Prime Minister Netanyahu, is interested in a deal. And they accuse Israel of changing the deal that President Biden had announced as long ago as May.
That's a very good summary of the positioning of all of the pieces on the chessboard. Let's go back and look at them in a little bit more detail, one by one, if we can. Iran first. Do you think that any kind of a retaliatory attack is going to completely upend the apple cart here? Or could this process withstand another carefully calibrated Iranian attack that will certainly have all of the appearance of being a meaningful attack, but would be resisted by the Israelis in the way that they successfully did previously?
Well, the region and the red lines of the past have changed beyond all recognition in the last 10 months of this war. What seems clear is that Iran believes, and Hezbollah, their Lebanese proxy, believe, that they must retaliate at a time and place of their choosing. But we understand that significant pressure was exerted on Iran from the United States indirectly, from Arab allies, not to attack now, because that would shift the focus from these efforts to achieve a ceasefire back to the worry about another escalatory spiral in the region. Iran did not want to be seen to be blamed for any breakdown in the talks. I think Iranians, like Hamas, are very skeptical. They don't believe there's going to be progress, but they have made the decision not to strike, to let the talks go ahead. If the talks break down, then there is the very real possibility that tensions will escalate again. So a lot is in the mix today and in the days to come.
Yahya Sinwar is a very different individual to Ismail Haniyeh, his predecessor. He spent a lot of time in an Israeli prison. He is a militant through and through, very much at the hardline end of the Hamas spectrum. Do you believe that with his elevation the organisation has effectively changed character, and that this withdrawal from the talks is them walking away from the process, or is it something more tactical?
There were many candidates for this position of political leader of Hamas after Ismail Haniyeh was killed in Tehran. It surprised Tom that the most hardline of Hamas leaders, even Hamas officials say that have commented on how brutal he can be. Israel regards him as the mastermind of the October 7th attacks across southern Israel, Hamas's murderous rampage on that day that triggered these tensions. And we have seen that since he became the political leader, that, for example, the first rockets in months were fired from Gaza towards Tel Aviv. They landed in the water. They didn't strike. But there seemed to be signals that he would be hardening Hamas's view. On the other hand, there is widespread anger in Gaza and an unfathomable suffering among the people of Gaza. And he has been made aware of that. But equally, there's also anger at the assassination of Haniyeh that runs through the leadership of Hamas. The only branch they've held out is to say they believe that the United States has to exert pressure on Israel, and in particular on Prime Minister Netanyahu, because they believe that is the only way forward.
You have told us before that you believe Hezbollah has identified it as being in its best interests to exercise a similar level of restraint here and not get into an open front war with Israel. Has that calculation changed, do you think, or can we rely on Hezbollah not to be a spanner in the works here?
Well, the tensions along the Lebanon-Israel border have not stopped. The fires burn every day. There is fire drones and missiles and shooting going back and forth across that border on a daily basis. And Israel has also killed senior Hezbollah commanders since it assassinated and acclaimed that assassination in the southern suburbs of Beirut in late July. So that tension is always there, but it could be much, much worse. Of all of Iran's allies in the region, what they call the so-called axis of resistance, Hezbollah is the most heavily armed. And Iran and Hezbollah could send a rain of missiles into Israel that could overwhelm even Israel's much-vaunted defenses, their anti-aircraft and Iron Dome defenses.
To America next, Liz. Obviously, the White House wants this off the table as quickly as possible before they get into the election proper. Are they using all possible leverage to do that, though, do you think?
No. There is a great criticism that while President Joe Biden, who is a self-declared Zionist, a very, very loyal to Israel, has Israel's back. And while he has become increasingly critical, not just in private, but in public, about the way the war is going, that it has to stop. We've also heard similar criticisms in recent days from Vice President Kamala Harris, who's expected to be, who is now the Democratic nominee for president. But they haven't used the greatest lever, and that is arms sales to Israel. In fact, just 2 days ago, Antony Blinken announced that another $20 billion in arms sales to Israel have been approved. And they also approved another $3.5 billion in military assistance out of a package of $14 billion, an additional amount that had been approved by Congress during this war. So many say that if they wanted to, they could turn the taps off, but they haven't done that yet.
To Israel now, where recent episodes in the prisons and the actions of the hardline minister Itamar Ben-Gvir start to paint a picture of Israel as a country that is almost becoming ungovernable, or is at least far from politically coherent. How does that impact on how Israel will conduct itself in these talks?
The Israeli political system is always a messy process of coalition building, and Prime Minister Netanyahu now has these far right-wing ministers in his cabinet who constantly don't just take the actions you just described, very provocative actions that Prime Minister Netanyahu has not reined in, but they also have vowed to bring down the government if Prime Minister Netanyahu ends this war. But on the other side, there is almost an open mutiny now within the Israeli Defense Forces. Even the defense minister, Yoav Gallant, said recently that the idea of a total military victory that Prime Minister Netanyahu talks about is nonsense. And it's known that there is this great rift now between the military and the political leadership, with the military now saying, we've done enough. The time is right. We can accept those concessions. We can accept concessions to bring the hostages home. So there's division. There is these deep, deep cracks on the Israeli side. So the big question now: does Prime Minister Netanyahu, does he have the political will to make the deal that is on the table? And does Yahya Sinwar, somewhere in a bunker underneath the Gaza, the destroyed streets of Gaza, does he have the political will to make a deal as well?
Indeed. I mean, what you have described in the last 10 minutes now is a process at which there are people who either aren't going to be at the table, don't want to be at the table, or not doing everything that they could do while at the table, or are not particularly sincere in their engagement with the whole process. So when you look at the ceasefire deal that is on the table now, does it differ very much from the deal that was unsuccessful back in May? Is there any cause for optimism here?
Well, everyone was startled when Joe Biden stood up and made a speech and said, there is a deal, it's done, it's Israel's deal, he described it. And then Hamas accepted it. So, you know, everyone fell off their seats. Wow. And then it didn't work. And Hamas has accused Israel of changing the deal since then. And Hamas has also been charged with doing the same. Prime Minister Netanyahu says, no, we haven't added new conditions. These are clarifications. But even Israeli media this morning are saying that Prime Minister Netanyahu has tried to change the deal. Some of the remaining sticking points are, for example, about prisoners. The deal, which is a ceasefire and also a hostage release, hostages in exchange for prisoners, among the thousands of prisoners, Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails, and Hamas has submitted a list. Israel now says it wants to be able to take people off that list. It wants to be able to say that some of the high-profile prisoners will have to go abroad. They can stay in Palestinian areas. There's also discussions, disputes, and this dispute also is within the Israeli establishment between the military and Prime Minister Netanyahu about whether Israeli troops will stay in the Gaza Strip. Hamas says absolutely not. They must all leave. Israel, Prime Minister Netanyahu has been saying no. We have to keep a buffer along the Egyptian border. It's called the Philadelphia Corridor. There's discussion of another corridor, which was created in this war to divide the north of Gaza from the south of Gaza. So these are very, you know, they always say the devil's in the detail. They are very, very important gaps that still have to be closed. But the head of the CIA, Bill Burns, who is leading the American delegation, is said to have brought a bridging proposal. And last Thursday, when we had this unprecedented joint statement from the President of the United States, the Prime Minister of Qatar, the President of Egypt, saying, time is up. There's no excuse now. A deal is on the table. You have to put first the long-suffering people of Gaza and the long-suffering families of the hostages waiting for their loved ones to come home, not knowing if they are alive or dead, and fearing that with every passing day, more and more are dying.
Lise, detailed and comprehensive insight as always. Thank you very much for talking to us. Chief International Correspondent of the BBC, Lise Doucette there. Coming up after the break, should tobacco-style plain packaging be used for unhealthy foods?
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.